sucks a lot.
Hundreds of dorm residents get the word to start looking for off-campus housing.
An inside look into the University of Maryland's football team locker room.
And the second part of a three-part series on the effects of the powerful drug ecstasy. Terp Weekly Edition starts now.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Ross Masco.
And I'm Ashley Sharif. The campus housing crunch is taking another toll. Last spring, rising seniors got the word they would not be able to return to campus housing as of this fall. Now, sophomores living on campus are being told that come next year, they'll likely have to go as well. For a while now, students, political leaders, and school officials have been pleading for more student housing options. Terp Weekly Edition's Reynaldo Calvello reports on the big housing obstacles now facing the campus.
Finding a room on campus is tough, but about to get more difficult. Associate Director for Resident Life Jan Davidson says there are tough days ahead for upperclassmen starting next fall.
Not by choice, but that is a fact. No seniors, no super seniors, and some number of the juniors. So students who are now just starting their sophomore year are learning very difficult news that affects their housing choices in the future.
Danielle Lula, a Freshman Connection student, says that for her it has been overwhelming because she's off campus. Freshman Connection students accept enrollment in the spring semester, but take credits towards the degree in the fall before. With the commute, it's been difficult. What does she think about the changing housing situation?
That sucks a lot. I think the school should provide housings. I think that, no doubt about it.
Many of the more than 3,000 sophomores living in residence halls are eligible to stay on campus or move to the commons and courtyards. Resident Life's Davidson says next year juniors have decisions to make.
We'll do more to assure that students will be rising juniors and have a crack at all of the spaces that are available in South Campus Commons. We have a plan for nominally increasing the number of beds available in the courtyard. We'll do that in a way of reducing the price for students who opt to share a bedroom in courtyards, which does not now occur.
The main reason for the housing crunch? More freshmen are opting to live on campus. This year, 93% of the freshmen opted to live in dorms.
Those are phenomenally high percentages. To have 93.4% choosing our housing was a little above what we had budgeted. It added maybe about 70 students or so. Most of those students are living now in triples and some in lounges.
Senior Mike Sanford says the housing crunch could come back to haunt the university.
I would question coming here, but like finding housing, the housing in this area is so bad that and so expensive that I think it would turn a lot of people away.
What it all means is that as many as 1,000 juniors will be bumped from campus next fall to make room for freshmen and sophomores who want to live in the university housing. This week, RHA will meet with students to get their input on how to deal with the housing problem. In College Park, Reynaldo Calvello for Terp Weekly Edition.
A public forum last week to discuss the new East Campus Development Project. That forum was broadcast live on UMTV. Terp Weekly Edition's John Wist reports. The discussion was intended to shed some light on the project, but many questions were left unanswered.
Of College Park, called the East Campus Redevelopment Initiative.
As the cameras rolled on UMTV's coverage of the East Campus Development Forum, the focus quickly turned to making College Park a true college town. Vice President of Administrative Affairs Doug Duncan outlines the plan.
We're going to take some campus land and turn it into a town center with shops, with restaurants, with the hotel, with office.
Folger Pratt Argo principal Richard Perlmutter says the project will become a true town center, not only for the university, but for the surrounding community as well.
With its completion, it would be transformative to the university, College Park, and we hope the entire Route 1 corridor.
And Graduate Student Government Association President Laura Moore says the project will give students a new identity.
When you go to college, you want to be part of a college town. And I think East Campus is going to be the kind of place where you can take your family, go with a few friends.
After discussing the flavor of the new development, the audience turned the focus to the potential impact the project will have on the environment, housing, and traffic. But the panelists seemed to dodge the questions. Folger Pratt Argo's Richard.
There will be some green technology that will be incorporated. this point, it's too early to say exactly what we will be doing, but we're focused on it, and we do hear that that's something that's important.
The construction phase calls for relocating all of the services facilities on campus to another area on the other side of Route 1. Will that mean more traffic problems for the campus? Vice President of Administrative Affairs Doug Duncan doesn't seem to think so.
You will see an impact on Route 1 just because of the fact we've moved all those vehicles onto the campus itself. They don't then have to cross Route 1 anymore.
Duncan then turned his attention to the much talked about Metro Purple Line.
We will still see sort of the traffic levels on campus. That the Purple Line is something that we are going to accommodate in the East Campus, that it'll be part of the development there. So, you know, when the Purple Line comes, that's going to make a huge difference, I think, in people's ability to take transit.
Those who did turn out for the event left with some questions still on their minds. Physics professor Dieter Brill.
Nobody said anything about the academic environment. You know, in what way is it going to enhance the academics or the intellectual quality of the place?
Duncan says the approval process is underway and that the university has received over 40 requests from businesses to acquire spots in the new development. In College Park, I'm John Wist, reporting for TERP Weekly Edition.
Maryland students may see a rise in bus riders in the future, and not just because of the increasing student population. According to the Diamondback, State Senator Jim Rosapep is trying to revive a bill that would allow College Park residents access to the Shuttle UM service. The bill, which was shot down in the state legislature last year, will allow the residents to ride the buses in return for a fee paid by the city. Last year, State Attorney General Joseph Curran shut down the plan after expressing concern that the agreement would allow outside authorities control over Shuttle UM. Students were originally split on the issue. The SGA and the graduate student government supported the plan, while the Residence Halls Association and the University Commuters Association said they were worried about student safety. The student groups ultimately reached a compromise. Residents riding the buses will be required to have ID cards. The cost for the city would be around $5,000. Even if the bill passes, student leaders will still have to sign off on it.
Students rarely look forward to the sometimes lengthy walks across campus, dodging traffic and construction. But last week, getting to class was made a little easier, thanks to a pair of pedicabs that popped up around campus offering free rides to any and all takers. Driver Arizuka says he had a good time driving Maryland students around.
That's been a lot of fun. Meeting a lot of cool students. They're having a lot of fun in the pedicabs. The weather's been great, so it's been a pretty positive experience.
The pedicabs ran from Monday to Thursday last week, just long enough for Zuka to see at least one thing out of the ordinary.
I did see one student take her Great Dane in with her, so I saw a Great Dane and a student go by in one of the other pedicabs, which is pretty funny.
Pedicabs depend on human power. The batteries help to run the cabs as well.
Has it been a really strong workout for your legs?
Oh yeah, totally. These batteries last about 4 hours, but a lot of it's just me pedaling.
The pedicabs didn't just pop up. They were on campus to promote Jerry Seinfeld's B-movie, but they've already moved on. This week, they're at UNC. Next stop, NC State.
Coming up, we'll take you inside the University of Maryland's football team locker room and a standing-room-only crowd for a special lecture on campus. We'll tell you what brought out the crowd. This is TERP Weekly Edition.
Lecture that not only informs, but is helpful and laugh-out-loud hilarious. That's exactly what Dorian Sollett and Marshall Miller do, and they travel around the country with their act, packing in crowds to hang on their every word. What's the topic? Female orgasms. The couple graduated from Brown University, where Miller studied sexuality and society, and Sollett was trained as a sexual educator. They give male and female perspectives on a topic that many of us are curious about, but often too afraid to address. TERP Weekly Edition's Shira Yudkoff has the story.
There was not one empty seat in the 500-person lecture hall. People were even sitting outside the building next to open windows in order to hear Dorian Sollett and Marshall Miller's The Female Orgasm Lecture.
There are a lot of people here, much more than I expected.
Big supporter of TERPs for Choice is one of the co-hosts of this event, so I definitely came out to support their event, and apparently a lot of people did. I've never seen a campus event like this so packed.
The lecture began with a clip from the movie When Harry Met Sally.
I think they have an okay time.
How do you know?
I mean, how do I know?
Because
name?
Yes, because they...
How do you know that they're really?
What are you saying, that they fake orgasm?
It's possible.
Get out of here.
Why? Most women at one time or another have faked it.
Well, they have faked it with me.
Dorian Solet explains why they incorporate so much humor into their lecture.
This is a really fun subject. And tonight, we are actually going to have time to laugh and to talk about a subject a lot of people don't get to spend very much time talking about, women's sexuality and female orgasm.
Solet and Miller interacted with the audience throughout.
I'm sure I'm not the only person who finds this subject really interesting. I want to share what I'm learning with other people. And that is how I came to talk about a subject like female orgasm with audiences like you.
Female orgasm is one of those subjects that is of interest to a lot of people. If you're interested in this subject, say, oh yeah.
Oh yeah!
Yeah.
The sex ed most of us receive in high school, Miller says, is inadequate. He tells us to consider how useless driver's education would be if it were taught in the same manner that sex ed is.
You would come to a classroom. Teacher would say, welcome to driver's ed. You need to know that driving is very, very dangerous. You could die. So don't drive. Just don't do it until you're married.
Miller continued with this analogy.
I'll give you instruction on how to properly put on a seatbelt. And at the end of your seatbelt instruction, that would be it. Class would be over, your driver's education would be complete. And you wouldn't learn anything about how a car actually works. Like where the gas pedal is. How to turn on the headlights. How to back it out of the driveway.
The goal of the lecture was not only to inform students about female orgasms, but also to make people feel more comfortable about discussing sexual issues. For Terp Weekly Edition, this is Shira Yudkoff, College Park.
Dorian Solet says past traumatic sexual experiences may inhibit many women's sex lives, even in healthy relationships. She encouraged students scarred by sexual assaults to seek help through the counseling services at the University of Maryland. However, victims of sexual assault may have a harder time receiving counseling from the university. Starting this June, the Office of the Victim Advocate will have only one part-time employee due to a loss of grant money. Chelsea Frankel, a peer educator for Student Advocates for Education About Rape, or SAFER, says she's seen the program grow immensely since she joined in 2005. Frankel says many people rely on the services of the victim advocate, and she says it would be a disservice if victims of sexual assault could no longer receive counseling.
Last Thursday marked the 17th annual The Clothesline Project at the University of Maryland. It's a national event, a chance for those affected by violence against women to express their thoughts and emotions by writing on t-shirts. Those t-shirts are displayed on clotheslines. Here at the university, they covered the area around Hornbake Mall. This year, though, things didn't go quite as they did in the past, as we hear from Terp Weekly Edition's Kim Kaplan.
Words leave scars, too.
Real love doesn't leave bruises.
If you meet an attractive and funny guy at Cornerstone, you may be speaking to a rapist. My rapist.
Violence and sexual assault against women is a serious issue that victims say doesn't always get the face time it deserves. That's exactly why the Clothesline Project was created. The project is an opportunity for women to tell their personal stories in an unusual way. They decorate t-shirts with words and artwork. Then, those shirts are displayed on clotheslines. At Maryland, the clotheslines fill Hornbake Mall every year. In the past, participants were able to write anything they wanted on the shirts. And that included the names of alleged offenders. Not this year. University Health Center Director Dr. Sacred Bodison explains.
We would like our victims to only put first names or initials in order to be consistent with the National Clothesline Project policy.
Some students argue the change stifles their ability to fully express themselves, but the administration says there are possible consequences if full names are used of individuals who've not been convicted of a crime.
For liability reasons only, we're not here to inhibit survivors from voicing victimization experience and a healing process, but simply for common sense risk management, we need to take that stance.
When members of the student group SAFER, Student Advocates for Education About Rape, heard that full names would be prohibited, they decided to set up their own unofficial clothesline across the sidewalk.
Basically, these are shirts that list the full name of perpetrators.
These students say they feared a backlash for airing their dirty laundry, names and all. But SAFER member Maddie Pinkert says that didn't happen.
I think overall it's been very positive. We had braced ourselves for much more negative reactions, and We just haven't really gotten that. We've gotten a few questions. People are signing our petition.
AJ Arisi, a member of Safer and Delta Tau Delta fraternity, is behind a petition asking the university to let victims write whatever they want, because many consider it part of the healing process. Arisi says his fraternity has had issues involving sexual assaults in the past, and he says this project is a good way to help the fraternity move forward.
We're aware that we have some shirts up there with our names on it, and you know, we've dealt with our problem. We use these shirts as an educational tool for our new members. Make them aware that we don't accept it. This is where we were in the past. We never want to be there again. We do have good guys at the house, and a lot of those shirts name the guys that have helped them.
While many people still felt the power of the messages displayed, others say the controversy over the names on the t-shirts was a distraction. Many were also left wondering what might be in store for next year's event. In College Park, I'm Kim Kaplan, Terp Weekly Edition.
The harm to our economy because of climate change in the U.S. outweighs any benefits. That, according to a study here at the university. The study says climate change could benefit agriculture for some parts of the country. But the authors wrote that state budgets will be strained and the cost to cool homes will skyrocket. The total cost? Hard to predict, says the study.
Hundreds of shoes, pounds of laundry, and more pads than you can count. The Maryland football team equipment staff does more than just make sure the players are dressed. Terp Weekly Edition's Susan Friends takes a look at what goes on before the players hit the field.
With the mighty sound of Maryland behind them, the Terps football team rushes from the tunnel onto the field at Byrd Stadium. Fans can see the end result of lots of preparation on the field. But what you might not know is what goes on to get the team ready off the field. Just ask Ron Ohringer. He's in charge of making sure all the players are dressed properly before a game.
Game day, student managers come in here about 5 hours, 4.5 hours before the game and clean up the locker room, get everything set in their lockers, hang the jerseys up, and they give a nice setting when the players come in. You know, they get dressed, go out, and hopefully win a game.
But the job isn't all about game day. It starts in the basement of the Gossett Team House in a small room crammed with everything and anything a player could need. And Ohringer is in charge of it all.
Can't just say, well, you can't wear a jersey today while we get it fixed. But, you know, we put in a lot of hours during the year, and there's no, you know, really during the football season, there's no calling in sick.
And don't forget that laundry.
Probably about 400 pounds a night of laundry. I mean, we have two machines. One's an 85-pounder, one's a 50-pounder, and we fill them probably each three times.
As for the players, well, looking good is nearly as important as playing well.
Yeah, they like to profile in front of the mirror out there and make sure their wristbands are on right and their jerseys tucked in right, but they look good.
While the job might not be the most glamorous, Ohringer, who has worked for the team for over 20 years, including 4 years as a student manager, says it's worth it.
You know, it's not a normal job where you're sitting with a shirt and tie. I can come to work in shorts, I can come to work, you know, dressed comfortable. It's kind of something different every day.
The next time you see the Terps rush out onto the field with their shiny helmets and well-tailored uniforms, keep in mind that tiny room where it all begins, piece by piece. In College Park, I'm Susan Friends, Terp Weekly Edition.
Coming up, Intel tries out a new Friday email policy, and the University of Maryland prepares for Halloween. You're listening to Terp Weekly Edition. How addicted are you to your email? Think you could go a day or more without it? Terp Weekly Edition asks students around campus.
With schoolwork and job opportunities, email has been very efficient for me.
I don't spend that much time on the computer, actually.
Email has taken over my personal connection in life, especially with my own father, actually. I find myself emailing back and forth with him rather than calling.
I don't use email that often.
USA Today reports some businesses have decided that enough's enough and are going email free. Engineers at chipmaker Intel are cutting back on the amount of emails being sent, at least on Fridays. This month was the first time Intel instituted email-free Fridays. The goal is to encourage more interpersonal communication. What do Maryland students think about such a policy?
I like the idea of people talking to each other more. I think it's a little bit silly for a company to implement it, making everybody less efficient if they cut off email.
I think that's actually a really great idea. I'm personally a better speaker rather than a writer.
USA Today reports in some cases, entire email inboxes are being deleted. Email is still permitted, but Intel workers are being encouraged to pick up the phone or meet face-to-face rather than communicate through cyberspace.
It's that time of year again. Time for costumes, pumpkins, and cider. But this Halloween, the University of Maryland is trying something new to get students into a ghostly mood. Mysterious Maryland, an exhibit of creepy stories and legends in Hornbeck Library, tries to set the record straight on a few of the spookiest myths on campus. I sat down with the exhibit's curator, who shared some of Maryland's best tales.
If it's ghost stories you're looking for, Jenny Levine has plenty. Levine is the curator of Mysterious Maryland.
This exhibit is an attempt to tie together all of the ghost stories that we've collected here in the archives over the years that have to do with campus.
Not all of the exhibit focuses on tales from the campus.
We've extended the scope of the exhibit to stories that relate to Prince George's County and the area surrounding campus.
One part of the exhibit looks into sightings of three creepy figures in the suburbs of D.C. Among them, the Bunny Man, a crazed man armed with a bunny costume and a hatchet. Dwayo, a bizarre beast that is harmless and friendly, and Levine's favorite, the Goat Man, the product of a science experiment gone horribly wrong.
He runs around Prince George's County and jumps in front of cars, and he kills dogs, not people. And I like dogs, so I'm not happy about that, but I think it's kind of a fun story.
One of the more recent stories involves the death of Len Bias, Maryland's star basketball player who died of a drug overdose in Washington Hall in 1986.
The rumor is that students who live in Washington Hall can hear a basketball dribbling in the room where Len Bias lived.
Levine says between 10 and 20 students visit the exhibit each day. Most of the feedback on Mysterious Maryland has been positive, but some visitors think the exhibit is insensitive to relatives of the recently deceased.
We understand their concern. We've tried not to show faces or overly capitalize on stories that relate to students who passed away relatively recently.
Are all of these stories based on real events?
We've managed to find factual information that could back up the stories, but a lot of them do sound very similar to urban legends that are found all over the place.
Go see for yourself and decide. Mysterious Maryland runs until December 21st.
Been putting off that term paper? Or waiting till the last minute to read those 10 chapters? You're not alone. Procrastination is a serious problem, especially among college students. That's why the University of Maryland Center for Health and Well-Being invited mental health counselor Kate Weisemer to campus. Terp Weekly Edition's Kim Kaplan says, students found that when it comes to procrastination, it's never too late to break old habits.
How do you procrastinate?
Basically wasting time surfing the internet, play video games, hang out with people, anything but think about the work I have to do.
15 to 20% of all people are chronic procrastinators, according to a recent study by the University of Calgary, and 95% procrastinated sometime in their lives. Researchers say this can lead to depression, poor health, and poor performance in school or work. Regardless of why and how people procrastinate, therapist Kate Wiersema says there are ways to correct the problem.
It's different for everyone, and everyone has to find their own method of dealing with that. One of the things you find hardest is to figure out when during the day is your energy level the best.
Wiersema says once you decide that, you can set small goals to be accomplished during that time. Sophomore Joseph Flowers is a frequent procrastinator.
I kind of get motivated, and I think I do my best work when I have a time crunch.
Wiersema says this can be okay occasionally, but you should consider the consequences.
Is that what you want to do for 5 papers in 1 week, stay up all night each night?
Wiersema also says that while most people look at procrastination as a negative, it can sometimes be a good thing.
When you don't understand the assignment, you need to think about it a little bit more before you plunge into the work. If you have something more important, then you can procrastinate on the less important thing.
Some who attended the workshop were unsure if they would change their ways. Many agreed, though, that while they had heard many of the same tips before, it was a good reminder and a way to get refocused. In College Park, I'm Kim Kaplan for Terp Weekly Edition.
Every time I make it to a mile, I'm going to myself.
Maryland's 2007 Family Weekend included the Maryland Parents Association 5th Annual Silent Auction. The auction raises money to support students who are in need of help to finish their education here in College Park. Some items up for grabs included stays at hotel resorts in Ocean City and athletic packages to future football and basketball teams. Trinidad Cruz is with the Parents Association Advisory Council.
We have items that are donated throughout the area, Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, and what we're trying to do is raise up to $20,000 for the scholarship fund.
More than 20 businesses and families offered items for the auction.
It's a drug you don't hear a lot about these days, but make no mistake, ecstasy is still very much a part of the scene. Last week, Terp Weekly Edition's Carly Rubel began a special series taking a look at the drug. This week, Carly says, as if the dangers from taking the drug itself weren't bad enough, it seems the drug some think they're taking may actually be something else.
Meth, heroin, speed. Not drugs you'd think are common on a college campus. But many students are unknowingly taking these drugs in place of the more common drug, ecstasy. Drug enforcement agent Paul Maloney explains.
One of the biggest dangers of the drug is you don't know what it's being mixed with. When it's being manufactured in a lab, you can add different types of chemicals to it, like methamphetamine. A lot of times it's cut with heroin. You don't know what exactly is in it.
One student experienced negative side effects when what he thought was ecstasy turned out to be mostly a hardcore stimulant.
I was up for a total of 56 hours or something crazy like that.
Some ecstasy users who are aware of these dangers invest in testing kits.
The full testing kit can detect whether an MDX substance is in the pill. It can also detect if there's meth or any other speed. The only thing it can't tell you is how much is in the pill.
However, Maloney insists that these kits cause more harm than good.
Unfortunately, with a lot of these test kits, it gives people an opinion that what they're taking is safe, and it isn't.
Despite the dangers, many users don't care what may be in the pills they are taking, as long as they get high.
I mean, every time's a little different, and every pill's different. You never know where it's coming from, and every one of them has a different name. Probably a couple other drugs were in there.
Even though the risks of taking ecstasy are high, some users will take as many pills as they have to in order to feel the high they got the first time they tried the drug. In the final segment of this three-part series, you will hear from a student whose life was derailed by his ecstasy use. For WMUC News, I'm Carly Rubel. That's all for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Ashley Sharif.
And I'm Ross Masco. Tune in to us next week when we'll give you more news from in and around College Park. Also, don't forget to check us out on the web at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.